And we'll call case number 21-4144, Mukun Tagara versus U.S. Department of Homeland Security. Counsel?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Daniel Black, counsel for appellants Agnes Mukun Tagara and her son, Ebenezer Shaka. The issue in this case is who will provide judicial review of USCIS's decision to terminate the refugee status and derivative refugee status of appellants.
There is a predicate issue first, and that is this moot as to the mother, Bukinjara, because she has been re-granted the status that she desires? And why, and is it moot as to the son, although I acknowledge that he is being deprived of a derivative claim that he probably can't ever get back? Maybe that by itself makes it unmoot, but except for that, would it be moot? But so that's jurisdictional, so just in a moment, answer that question.
Thank you, Judge. It is not moot because...
First, for the mother.
For the mother, she has lost the ability to protect her son from deportation under the Child Status Protection Act, and that is a consequence that continues to affect her today.
And you made a claim under the Child Protection Act?
Yes. Okay. All right. That was raised in our complaint before the district court.
All right, so that's the mother.
Yes, and then the son, he has a final order of removal to Rwanda, which he should not have, and the mother cannot protect him from that. And so that's why both appellants are here in this case, and it is not moot for either of them because he still has that order, and she still cannot protect him.
Okay, so the mother has lost her right of protection. He has lost the right of coattailing on the mother's
derivative status. He's lost the right to have his derivative status. Okay. Yes, that is correct. And there are only two options in this case. Either this court will remand this case back to the district court for judicial review under the APA, or, as government counsel argues, this court will conduct that judicial review on the other case, which is the petition for review case, Shaka v. Garland. That's case 21-9583. The problem is where the government in this case is stating that judicial review is not appropriate here, it has to be done over there. The government in that case is also saying not here either.
Which is it? It's saying, what was the government saying in the other case?
That there's no judicial review available there of USCIS's termination decision.
Why?
In the PFR.
Why?
Because it was not considered by EOIR.
Oh, because he didn't argue it. Yeah.
No, not that he didn't argue it. We did deny both charges before the immigration judge that were related to USCIS's termination decision. And we asked the immigration judge to review USCIS's termination decision. The immigration judge decided that he was barred from conducting that review by BIA precedent in matter of ASJ and his interpretation of the regulation at 8 CFR 207.9, which states that there is no appeal of this decision. We did seek judicial review through EOIR, and that was denied to us, which is why we had to file this complaint before the district court seeking review under the APA, because there was no other court that could provide an adequate remedy.
He's being removed. Why can't you appeal? I just don't quite understand why that removal order for him couldn't be appealed by him.
It is being appealed by him,
but in that process, the decision for removal made a new de novo determination of his loss of status.
No, it made a new de novo determination of his new asylum application. It never reviewed his loss of status.
The asylum application is whether there's been an adjustment of status, and that could be challenged. But you say he didn't challenge that.
He tried to challenge the loss of status with EOIR, and they said, no, we cannot review that decision here.
You can't review the decision by USCIS, but it can be examined anew, I thought.
It cannot.
It cannot?
An immigration judge, an EOIR, cannot grant refugee status, let alone derivative refugee status. They can only grant the applications that are filed before them, which in this case was a new asylum application. And that is the issue. Because it was a new asylum application, and because at that time, Mr. Shaka was over the age of 21, he had to, the immigration judge could only decide that application as an adult for Mr. Shaka, and could not grant him derivative asylum status.
That's why, in his particular case, because he aged out, that he couldn't raise that on an appeal of the decision to remove.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
What do we do with the concession of removability?
So there were two charges against Mr. Shaka in his notice to appear. We denied the charge that was directly related to the ground of inadmissibility because of USCIS's revocation decision. We denied that charge, hoping that the immigration judge would then, in contested removability proceedings, review USCIS's decision. He declined to do that. The same charge that we denied in the son's case, we also denied in the mother's case. And the immigration judge sustained the charge anyway, deciding that he could not review USCIS's decision. The charge that we did concede in the son's case was not related to the merits of USCIS's decision. It was simply a concession that his status had been revoked. It was an element that it was a fact, his status had been revoked, and we conceded that it had been revoked in 2016. Not that it was a valid revocation, not that it was justified, not that it was proper, just that it had happened. And an immigration judge simply has to find that the status had been revoked. And he did. But that is not...
I thought that could be raised again in the motion to remove. I mean, in the action to remove.
The reason it cannot be... You're talking about the petition for review?
Yeah.
The reason it cannot be raised again...
In the removal decision.
It forms no part of the removal decision.
But it could have been. But for the fact he conceded.
No.
He conceded a loss of status and didn't challenge it.
But the loss of status is separate from the basis for the loss of status. We are challenging here the decision by USCIS, not the fact that the loss of status led to removal proceedings and anything that happened in removal proceedings. Appellants are not challenging the final order of removal. They're not challenging anything that the immigration judge did.
I understand.
They're not even challenging the initiation of removal proceedings. They're challenging something that has never and can never be considered in removal proceedings, and that is the basis for the revocation. The immigration judge could only make a finding that the revocation happened, not that it was valid or justified. And that's what we're trying to challenge here.
Can he really raise it? I mean, does he even have personal standing to raise it? I mean, doesn't his case depend on the success of his mother's case? Because if she loses, he loses. Is that fair?
If she had been denied asylum status by the immigration judge, we would still be able to challenge USCIS's decision through the APA. That's the reason why the APA exists, is because there has been no review and there is no meaningful review of that decision in EOIR. And so even if she had been denied, we would still be able to seek APA review of this unappealable final agency action because there is no adequate remedy in any other court.
But doesn't that go against the statutory policy, for lack of a better term, that they're trying to get all of this stuff consolidated and heard in one petition for review? What you're trying to do will result in multiple proceedings in all these cases.
The 1252, the statute, is trying to zip up all issues and questions of fact and all of that arise from removal proceedings. This decision did not arise from removal
proceedings. But he's only being removed because his status was revoked.
No, he's being removed because his asylum application was denied because he was over the age of 21. He was placed into removal proceedings because his status was revoked. That is a triggering event that does not arise from removal proceedings. Just like in Canal v. USCIS, just like in DHS v. Regents, and Perez v. USCIS.
So what if
those
he hadn't asked for
events that
what
don't
if he,
form,
what if he hadn't moved for asylum? What if he hadn't moved for asylum?
What if he had not applied for asylum before the immigration judge?
Yeah. Would you still be trying to challenge the decision revoking his status?
He only had to apply after the judge refused to review USCIS's decision.
No, I understand that. And so,
I mean,
say he didn't apply.
If you don't submit any application for relief before an immigration judge, you are ordered removed.
No, I understand that. And so they revoke his status because he'd aged out. And it throws him into removal proceedings. And he says, whoa, 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 it was erroneous to revoke my status in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can't be removed. You've got to review their decision to revoke my status.
That's what he asked the immigration judge to do. And the immigration judge said, I cannot do it because of matter of ASJ. BIA precedent forbade him from doing that. And the BIA has upheld that decision.
So isn't what you're doing just a backdoor then? Because you're trying to get in there and undo what the immigration judge couldn't do.
The fact that the district court, if it did overturn USCIS's decision through APA review, the fact that could moot removal proceedings does not change the fact that it cannot be reviewed anywhere else.
Well, technically, I think the law is very clear. It cannot be reviewed. That is, a decision by USCIS cannot be reviewed substantively. But I'm apparently confused. Apparently, I'm operating under a misunderstanding here. But I thought that once you got to the DOJ and you got to the question of removal, that they could look anew at his status.
They can only look at things
if he had put it in issue. Now, he didn't, that's a problem. But put that aside for a minute. Couldn't they, in most cases, look anew at that, at his status?
Only if it arose from removal proceedings. And this did not arise from removal proceedings. It led to, as the government admits in their reply brief, this was a decision that led to the initiation of removal proceedings. Something
well,
that leads to...
Only if it arose from the removal proceeding. How could it arise from a removal proceeding and not have been a predicate act by the USCIS?
Because logically, an action that leads to the initiation of a new process cannot also arise from that new process.
Let me just ask you a yes or no question, and then I'm done questioning on that. Can the DOJ and the hearing examiner, can they make a de novo examination of his status?
Only if they overturn BIA precedent. Because in the other case, the other panel hearing the PFR case would have to overturn BIA precedent and then send the case back to the immigration judge to perform that review because the Tenth Circuit is not a fact-finding court, and they would have to send that back to the immigration judge so that he could get the record from USCIS and review it in order for that review to happen in the PFR. Under current immigration law, that's not a possibility. The only court under current law that has the ability to provide judicial review of USCIS's termination decision is the district court under APA review. I'm going to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
May it please the court, Jennifer Williams for the United States. This is an immigration case about where individuals in removal proceedings may seek review of the termination of their refugee statuses by CIS. Plaintiffs cannot circumvent the judicial review scheme set up by the Immigration and Nationality Act, which channels review of all challenges to any part of the process by which their removability is determined to the Court of Appeals in a timely filed petition for review of a final removal order. To put it simply, plaintiffs filed their claim in the wrong court. The district court therefore properly held that it lacked jurisdiction under 1252b9 over their claim filed under the Administrative Procedure Act, challenging the termination of their refugee statuses. If plaintiffs have properly exhausted their administrative remedies in immigration court, then they will have the opportunity to seek review of the termination of their refugee statuses by CIS through a petition for review of a final removal order.
So what did it tell? Take me through the steps. What did they need to do to properly be here?
So plaintiffs are now in different positions, the mother and the son.
Okay, let's talk about the son, because the mother's pretty clearly in a different position.
Yes. So the son would have had to challenge. Let me start by saying that we disagree that this court, through the petition for review, would not have jurisdiction over the challenge to the termination of refugee status. Our position is that the court would have jurisdiction to review CIS's termination of refugee status through the petition for review case.
All right, so let's back up. So there's a son is sitting at home, age 22, and he gets a notice that he no longer has refugee status because he's aged out. What does he do next?
Well, he's automatically placed into removal proceedings, which is why, in part, this claim is necessarily a part of the proceedings by which removal is determined.
Okay.
What he should have done before the immigration court is not concede removability. And in fact, in his appeal to the board, he makes an ineffective assistance claim that his counsel was ineffective for having him concede his removability before the immigration judge. The board denied that claim, but that claim, the petition for review is currently stayed pending in part the outcome of this case.
Okay, so tell me this. So he gets his notice and he's automatically placed into removal proceedings. And so instead of conceding removability, he does what? What's he supposed to do?
He contests removability. And it is true that the immigration judge and the board cannot independently review the termination decision.
Okay.
But if he contests removability, as his mother did, then to prove removability, the agency comes in with the documents relating to the termination of refugee status. The immigration judge and the board can't review the termination, so they find him removable as charged. And he can then challenge the termination of refugee status in a petition for review before this court. And that is the procedure.
So the IJ could not do a new examination of his change in status, but it could issue a finding about that change in status having previously been made by the USCIS, and that could have been appealed to the courts.
Yes, so he would appeal to the board. The board would basically say the same thing. We can't. You know, we're bound by the termination decision. We find you removable.
So there is no situation where the IJ or the in the Department of Justice for the removal could do a de facto new examination of his change in status.
I think I disagree with that. Our position is this court.
You disagree or agree?
I disagree, I think, with what you just stated. Our position is that this court, through the petition for review case.
I'm not asking about this court. I'm asking what the IJ could do.
Oh, the IJ. I'm sorry. No, the IJ cannot review the termination decision.
Okay.
So what we have is two required steps that you're proposing that are futile. All they do is end up, they put more information in the record, but the acts themselves are futile because they're dead on arrival at both the IJ level and at the board.
Well, it's an exhaustion of administrative remedies.
Agreed, but generally exhaustion requirements are not required where seeking exhaustion would be futile, right?
Well, I would say before we go down this path that...
Well, but I like that path, so well, I want
to
make sure...
Stay on this path, and then we'll go back to your path.
I will, but I...
We'll take the road less
but
taken.
Before discussing that, I would say that that is a question that is currently pending before this court in the petition for review case. The question before this court today is 1252B9 and which court hears this case. Whether the district court has jurisdiction or whether the circuit court has jurisdiction through the petition for review. The question of whether he failed to exhaust his administrative remedies is in some ways tangential to that issue. Our position today is that 1252B9 clearly channels review of this claim to the Court of Appeals in the petition for review. Now, whether the court agrees, I believe we are making the argument in the petition for review that he failed to exhaust and that he was required to. But the court hasn't decided that issue. In fact, it hasn't been briefed. Because that case has stayed pending this case.
I mean, just listening to that though, your agency's taking the position in the other appeal that he failed to exhaust, but here you've just conceded that any steps for exhaustion are futile.
Well, it's not futile if it I would make the argument that it's not futile if it preserves jurisdiction for the issue to eventually be considered by the Court of Appeals. But I would also say again that these discussions regarding exhaustion and whether this court in the PFR ultimately has jurisdiction based on his alleged failure to exhaust really doesn't have anything to do with 1252B9 and whether the district court properly dismissed this case for lack of jurisdiction, which is really all this case is about today.
So I don't disagree with some of what you said, but it just seems like you've got him in a box that there's no way to get out of it, even though you suggest there is a way to get out of it. Because exhaustion matters definitely in the other case, but in a way it matters here because we're trying to figure out what he should have done. The claim is if he would have done something different, we wouldn't be here. And what he did wrong was he conceded removability, even though if he would have contested removability, he loses. At the board and at the IJ level, he loses. And so at some point they got to fit together. And it's complicated. I'm not sure how they fit together. And I know that my gut tells me it can't be, aha, we got you because you should have done X. But if you'd have done X, you lose because you failed to exhaust.
Well,
the only analogy I can think of in support of you, I mean, I think Judge Carson, this is exactly the concern I had. The only analogy I can see to the contrary is people all the time raise issues to us, which they say are barred by our prior Tenth Circuit precedent. And therefore, it's a waste of time, judges, for considering it. But we are having to raise it to preserve it for a petition for certiorari.
That's right. I mean, that is an apt analogy, I think, exhaustion. But I would also again say...
Except you can get en banc rehearing of our decisions.
Well, you can, but you got to agree that frequently that argument is made in the briefs.
Indeed.
Knowing that
all the time
rehearing is discretionary and therefore they can't be... It isn't something that you usually have to do when it's a discretionary
100% rehearing. Agreed.
And he will, it's not futile in that he would get judicial review. He might not get review by the IJ or the board, but he would get review by this court. And again, depending on the outcome of this case, my colleague at the Office of Immigration Litigation will probably one day be arguing this in the PFR case. And this is a discussion in that case, whether that
his case failure is stayed now.
It is.
And stayed for our decision?
I think
our decision might moot that case then.
Well, I'm not involved in that case at all. So I'm not privy to the reasons behind staying it. I believe it was stayed both for this case and for the, so the other way the son might eventually get judicial review depends on the outcome of the mother's case. So I believe that the PFR case was also stayed pending the outcome of the removal proceedings that the mother is still in.
But the mother, how can she overcome mootness?
Well, she has been granted asylum by the immigration judge, but I believe the agency has already appealed the grant of that asylum to the board. And so depending on what the board does, she might have her own petition for review one day.
But on a different, that's a new issue now.
Well, our position with her would be the same, though. If the board overturns the IJ's grant of asylum and finds her removable, she can file her own petition for review. As part of that petition for review, she too could challenge the termination of refugee status. If the son, they can both do it. Our position is consistent with respect to both of them. They can challenge the termination of refugee status through a petition for review.
So I guess the basis for your position is that the statute requires that this all be taken up at one time at the end of the case.
It is, and that is the stated purpose of these provisions, 1252b9.
Even though you have to go through a lot of Rube Goldberg processes to get there.
Well, the idea is that there are a lot of issues and it can be complicated. This channels review of all issues relating to removal proceedings into one review process that eventually ends up before this court in a petition for review from a final removal order. It's supposed to eliminate some of this piecemeal litigation.
Okay.
If the court has no further questions, I have nothing further.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
All right. I believe you're 49 seconds. Come on up.
Thank you. Your Honors, the government has put us in a box. But the way out of this box is judicial review under the APA at the district court, because USCIS's decision is not zipped up by 1252b9. It did not arise from removal proceedings.
If we agree with you on that, is that the end of the argument? Is that the end of the case? If we agree that it doesn't arise out of,
it would get remanded to the district court.
Is that as far as we need to go?
We would hope that that would be the end of the case at the district court if he overturns and vacates USCIS's decision. We would hope so. For the court's information, the immigration judge, just on September 26th of this year, reaffirmed his decision to grant asylum to the mother, reaffirmed that she's not subject to the persecutor bar, and then recertified that back to the Board of Immigration Appeals. We have offered to go to mediation with the government to decide this issue of where judicial review is going to happen, and that offer still stands. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The case will be submitted, and counsel are excused.